My name's Chrissy. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 26, 2010. I have a sponsor, and I'm available to sponsor others, and this is my home group. I wrote down what I wanted to say on this piece of paper, and then my boyfriend made fun of me, so I don't know if I want to read it or not, but then Amanda told me that Sandy uses paper when he talks, so I don't know what I'm going to do, but anyway, I think I'm just going to read it, all right. Okay, when I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a scared little girl. I was angry at God for everything bad that had happened to me in my life, because of course these things happened to me and I played no part in them. I hated everyone because humanity was pure evil, and there was no one in the world I hated more than myself and the life I was living. When I came here, I finally felt understood and at home. You all knew the pain that I had felt, but were genuinely happy, joyous, and free, and that was something I hadn't felt in a very long time. I really wanted what you had and was willing to do anything to get it. I had no idea when I got sober that it simply didn't mean staying away from a drink. It's a new way of life. My relationship with God is most important. Without that, I wouldn't have any of the gifts I have received. I'm also able to be accountable for my actions and recognize the part that I play in them. I'm able to forgive others, including myself, and let go of the past. Life now includes doing things that I don't necessarily want to do, but know that I need to do to continue to feel good, like going to meetings, being of service, helping others, being honest, and calling my sponsor. My sponsor has taught me how to live again. She always tells me to be an example of AA, but she has been the best example for me. I just admire her so much and can never thank her enough for playing such an instrumental part in saving my life and teaching me to finally love myself. I really feel that at times God speaks to me through her. She is like my big sister, and I'm so thankful that God put us in each other's paths because I'm no longer a scared little girl. Words can't describe all this little lady has done for me, so without further ado, I give you my sponsor, Annie.
I'm Annie, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 1st of 2006. I have a sponsor, and I've had the privilege to sponsor some other women. And I didn't write anything down, so it's not going to be probably as organized or well put as that was. But Chrissy was one of those girls that, and still is, that's been willing 100% of the time. She's you know, just like that. She doesn't always do the right thing, but she calls and tells me about it and then tries to correct whatever situation it is. But I met her here, and she was basically, I did for her what was done for me when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. She was sitting in a row here by herself. We got up to pray at the end of the meeting, and I stuck my hand out to her the same way that it was done for me. And, you know, it's just been, she's probably helped me as much as I've helped her, if not more, you know, and she's one of the ones that's like a real joy to sponsor because she just does what she's told to do. She shows up where she's supposed to show up, you know, and she calls when she needs to talk to me. She doesn't call me with like this crazy nonsense stuff that, you know, like, well, anyway, start sponsoring people, you'll know what I mean. So since we have just a bit of time, I'm going to try to keep it to the let's say the high points of my story, but there's a lot of low points too, so a little bit of both. I was born in St. Louis, Missouri, to two really fantastic parents who I think it's really important to mention that they gave me absolutely no reason to drink the way I drank or to do the things I did. And while I was drinking, and I guess I can relate to people when they say they felt different when they were younger. I was different when I was younger, because that's how I felt. And I didn't like go seeking a solution. I had a lot of friends, you know, like everything was pretty normal in my life. I took my first drink somewhere in the neighborhood of like 10, 11, 12. I'm not really sure. I was babysitting both times that I drank for the first time. And so my consequences were that I just didn't have to babysit anymore. Or I didn't get asked to babysit anymore. I didn't want to babysit anymore. Anyway, so on them. You know, it wasn't like after I took that first drink, it was, you know, I'd found a solution to anything. But I liked it, you know. And I did it, I guess, as often as I could thereafter. I was always really good at showing up, always making things look good from the outside. I never wanted to worry my parents or disappoint them, so I always like had a job, did really well in school, showed up for curfew, you know, I followed the rules. I looked real good from the outside. I think I only got caught once in high school, and that was it, you know. Other than that, like I said, I played it pretty safe. When I went away to college, that was the first time that I'd gotten to like get away, and I didn't have parents to watch me or curfew or anything like that, and I found the people that drank like I drank. It wasn't real hard to do, and I started to pretty much. Alcohol became my number one priority. Everything that was a priority at that time came second to alcohol. If people were going to a party and I was on my way to class, I was no longer on my way to class, you know. If they were going to the park to drink keg, I was going to the keg party. And it was pretty obvious, pretty quick. With my classes and my transcripts, you can see pretty much like my alcoholism progressed, you know. I showed up real good in the beginning, and pretty quickly I stopped going. And my consequences were not bad, you know. I just stopped going to school, and that's what I wanted to do. I just didn't feel like going to school anymore. And I started working in a restaurant, and that was a lot of fun, you know. And so I thought, I'll just work in a restaurant for the rest of my life. And That's a scary thought. Now I still have nightmares about it. I had a dream about it the other night. It's horrible. But anyway, so I'm working in a restaurant. I'm you know, drinking most of the night, sleeping most of the day, and working and drinking and sleeping and that cycle. And I'm getting distracted because he's doing sign language back there, and I'm like, what is he doing? I didn't get in a lot of trouble right away. I did get a DUI during that time after I'd quit going to school. I got my first DUI. I was 20 years old. I got locked up, you know, normal stuff that happens when you get a DUI, and of course, it was not my fault, you know, like, I had left a bar at 2 o'clock in the morning and accidentally rolled a stop sign, and then I got pulled over and had a warrant for my arrest, and got, you know, arrested because I blew a .28 that night, so, I was a little intoxicated, and so, you know, that was my first, like, big consequence, and as a result of that, I decided to, during that time, like literally while I was getting arrested, my parents were on their way, they were moving to the Florida Keys, and so I didn't call them, I wouldn't have called them anyway, but because I didn't want them to know what was going on, but I went to visit them very shortly after I got that DUI, because like, pretty quick after I got the DUI, I lost my restaurant job, like things were just crumbling around me in St. Louis, so I went to go see my parents. I'd never been to the Keys before, but when I got there, it was like... water on both sides and bars, and like if you've ever been to St. Louis, you would definitely move to the Keys too. So I went down there. I don't remember. I don't think I told my parents what kind of trouble I was in St. Louis, but I asked them if I could move down there. Long story short, 5 weeks later, I'm living in the Keys. By the time I got to the Keys, my alcoholism had progressed to the point where I couldn't go to sleep at night without drinking. Of course, my parents don't know this, but I am, like, staying up all night, kind of, like, getting into whatever liquor I can get into that's in their house, and they're not real big drinkers, so they kind of notice. The other thing they noticed was that I was sleeping on their couch at noon when they came home for lunch, and couldn't really figure out why I was doing that. I was doing that because I was up until 4 or 5 in the morning drinking. So I had to get out of there because that was not going to work out real well. And so I got a job that offered me staff housing. So it was like dorms without having to go to school. So it was really awesome. And like I found, again, people that pretty much were living like I was living, you know. And that cycle of working, drinking, sleeping started all over again. Next consequence was I started to shake. I really didn't know what the shaking was about, but I knew that once I drank, the shaking went away. That did not, like, raise any red flags for me that I had a problem with alcohol. I was like, oh, okay, I just need to drink more so the shaking stops. And so I started doing things like drinking at work and to help with the shaking. And as a result of that, I, of course, lost that job. And when you lose the job there, they take the house too. So I ended up for, you know, about the next 10 months couch surfing. And what that meant is that I went to the bar every single night to find a place to sleep. You know, sometimes I knew where I was going, most of the time I didn't, because I blacked out all the time, you know. And for that period of time and many other times, I woke up on a daily basis with the hideous four horsemen, that terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. I really relate to that in the big book. I didn't know what that was then. It was more like, oh, shit, then. But it, like, I was finally able to put words to it after I got sober. And man, it was every day, you know, and the only thing I knew to take that away was another drink. So, you know, my solution was what was killing me. And so I would drink to not feel what was going on and then do it all over again, you know. At some point, my kidneys started to hurt because of the way I was drinking and the things I was putting into my body. And I didn't want to tell anybody that because I knew that they would know as if they didn't know already. But, you know, I knew that people would know that I was drinking too much. So what I did was I went back to the first couch that I surfed on, and I stayed there for like 3 or 4 nights, and I had to detox. I think that was the only time I've ever really had to detox, like, bad, you know, where that, like, you're sweating and shaking and crying and really, really mad. And so towards the end of, like, when I started to feel better, my kidneys started to feel better, I started my controlled drinking, which the big book also talks about. You know, I didn't know people did things like this. I didn't know people that, like, I didn't know that people drank only beer or they drank only wine or they, you know, like, if you had to work the next day, you just drank beer. But if you didn't have to work, you did beer and shots. But, like, vodka was what was, like, killing me. So I was like, no more vodka unless maybe, like, I don't have to work for a couple of days, you know. But I really started to try to, like, make it work. And so as a result of, like, trying to make it work, I was controlling my drinking for a little while, and things got a little bit better. You know, I got a place to live that, like, I paid rent at, you know, and I got a better job, and I started to make more money. I started to have some money, and that's kind of like, you know, what happens when we get sober, you know what I mean? Like, things get better. But, you know, I reverted back to the same stuff, you know. At some point during that living situation, I needed to get out of it, so I moved home with my parents. And by the time I'd moved home to my parents, again, I was 22, and I couldn't really even speak in full sentences. I would try to, like, tell my parents what had happened to me and where I'd been and what had gone on, but I couldn't put it together. And I think that I didn't want to tell him my part. I didn't want to tell him the part that I'd played, which was that, like, I went out every night and I got wasted and I put myself in these positions. And as a result of that, you know, like, things happen. Like, bad things happen. Things that that I carried until I got here, you know. So that was pretty bad. And so I tell my mom all this stuff, and she's, like, looking in the blue pages for, like, you know, like, government help. She has no idea what to do with me, you know. Like, nobody in my family's ever gone to AA. Nobody's ever been, like, you know, alcoholic, like, actually said they were an alcoholic. We didn't have any knowledge of what to do. Thanks. And so I really freaked them out, you know, and I don't suggest that to anybody. I relieved a lot of my guilt at my parents' expense, you know. They had no idea, and I had no idea what I was doing to them, you know. There was a lot of times prior to me moving back to my parents' house that I would go to my mom and dad's house, and I would go there once a month to drop off my truck payment. You know, I had the option to go there as often as I wanted to, but I would go there, and my mom would say to me every single time, like, something's wrong with you. Like, you look bloated. You know, you smell like alcohol. And I was like, get off my back, lady. Have a drink, you know? Like, it was her problem, you know? And I really thought that because I wasn't doing it in her face, that it was none of her business. And man, we affect people, whether we like it or not, you know? Hopefully, you know, as a result of coming here, I get to affect people in a positive way now. But man, I really affected people that I had nothing to do with, you know, that I didn't even see. And I don't know how much sleep my parents lost, but, you know, I was killing them. I was killing my mom. My dad looked at me at some point and was like, you know, I've washed my hands of you. You know, if it wasn't for your mom, I wouldn't even talk to you. And that's been fully mended as a result of coming to AA and working the steps. So anyway, I moved back in with my parents, and they're kind of starting to manage my life for me. I like get a job at a different island, and I'm like trying to do the right thing, and I just can't. You know, I just can't. I end up getting a job in a restaurant again. I end up doing the same stuff I always do, but this time I like met somebody and ended up moving in with him because he could babysit me, really. You know, and I didn't know it then, but I know now that, you know, any relationship I had prior to getting sober was either, if it was with a male, he was a babysitter, and if it was a female, it was probably because you were doing the same thing I was doing, or you had something I wanted, or I had something you wanted, you know? And I really had no real relationships before I got here. So, you know, with this babysitter, I knew where I woke up every day. I knew where my car was every day. I might get filled in on what happened the night before, whether I wanted to or not. But, you know, I was pretty safe that way. And so, I don't know, I probably wouldn't have liked him either, but we didn't get along real well. And we ended up thinking that, like, it was the keys that was the problem. So just before this, I got my second DUI. Not that that matters. I'm pretty sure you believe that I'm an alcoholic up to this point anyway. You don't need two DUIs to be an alcoholic. But, again, just more consequences, you know, and more heartache that I'm causing my parents. And this time my mom had to bail me out of jail, and I looked at my mom, and I was like, man, I'd rather be dead right now. And she was like, do me a favor, don't kill yourself, you know. Because, again, I just don't care about anybody else. I don't care how I affect other people because it is, you know, it was all about me and what happened to me, and I couldn't believe that, you know, it was circumstances. It was not alcohol, you know. So the keys is a problem. Me and the babysitter moved to Tampa, and for no real reason except for that it was in Florida and it was north of Fort Lauderdale. And that's it, really. And so we get here, and I decide that he is the problem. It was not the keys. So I leave. I go get my own place. I'm working in a restaurant again. And Tampa is a big place to lose your car, you know. Like, and you don't have a babysitter. It is a rough place to be trying to manage a drink in. So I'm basically just doing the same thing I always do. And these, like, random things are, like, happening in my life, you know, this whole, like, year before I actually get sober. And it's things like I banged up my knee really bad at work, and so I've, like, got this, like, messed up meniscus, and I'm, like, limping all over the place and waiting tables, and it's just messy. And I, like, left my bird outside when it was 40 degrees, and the bird died because you can't leave birds outside in 40-degree weather, you know? And that was just, like, being drunk, you know? I just forgot about the bird, and that really bothered me. But I, like, went to go see my parents for Christmas. I was supposed to, like, drive here and catch this boat and take it, and I totally messed that up, you know. And then the last thing was that right before I got sober, like my last really bad drunk, I like woke up in the middle of the night and opened the window because it was hot, and my cat pushed the screen out of the bedroom window and left, and it was like, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back, you know, like the cat left. And so I'm coming to work all the time and telling my, like, everybody, like, I'm just like pouring myself into work, like, oh my God, you wouldn't believe what happened today. And so my boss was like, do you think that, like, maybe all this stuff that's happening is a result of the way you're living? And I'm like, no, you know? And the thing was that, like, he had no idea where I had come from, you know what I mean? I had hit bottom long before, and things were looking really good at the time. I had my own place, I had my own car, I paid my own stuff, I never asked anybody for anything, I did what I wanted. For all I knew, I was a free woman, you know? And so this guy decides to point out my drinking and basically sits me down for an intervention and says, you know, I can't watch you do this anymore, and you can't drink anymore, and not just at work, if you want to work here. And if you can't do that, then you can take your journey somewhere else. And so I said, I'll think about it. And the thing was, is I had rent due like the next week, and there was no way I was calling anybody to help me with my rent. So I tried really hard to get wasted that weekend, and for whatever reason, I just couldn't. I think I knew that it was almost over, at least for a little while. And so I looked in the blue pages. I don't know if anybody knows what the blue pages were. It's like there wasn't Google then or something. But I looked in the blue pages in the phone book, and there was a number for AA, and I called. And at the time, I lived right at Columbus and Himes. And so if you're familiar with that area, there's a club there called 3333 that was, like, I mean, literally, like, around the corner from my house. So I went there, and it was a noon meeting on Tuesday, so there's, you know, thousands of years of sobriety in the room, and they go around, and everybody says a sobriety date, and you know, like, Larry was there, and he was, like, 1973 or something, and I was, like, baffled at why people were still sitting in a room 35 years later, you know? I was pretty sure he wasn't going to drink anymore, you know? So they go around, and everybody, of course, we can always, pretty much always tell the newcomer. I was probably, like, sweating alcohol out of my pores. But I picked up a white chip, and something very important happened at that meeting. Two young girls came to me. They stuck their hand out at the end of the meeting, and they told me about this meeting and asked me if I would meet them back at that clubhouse on Thursday. Not meet them here, not meet them somewhere else, not drive myself here. Like, it was, come meet us here, and we'll take you to that meeting. And so that's what I did. I came and met them. They brought me here, and I got here, and I was, like, very, kind of like I felt right before I got up here to speak, like, very overwhelmed, you know, and people were, like, dressed nice, and they were smiling, and they had cookies, and they were making coffee, and I was convinced that they were smoking weed, and that is not the case. If you are, you should tell someone. And so the truth will set you free, trust me. So anyway, I ended up making this my home group pretty quickly, and this group has saved my life, you know. This is my home group, and they immediately got me into service. I'm pretty sure it was, like, that the same month I got sober, or maybe, like, the next month that I got appointed to the secretary. So, I mean, they didn't ask me if I wanted to. They're like, you're the secretary, and here's your announcements, and this is what you're going to do for the next 6 months, every Thursday at 7:30. And so I did, you know. There's something about, like, ever since I was, I mean, little in school and stuff, I just always wanted to, like, look like you, fit in, blend in, whatever. And people in this group were, like, getting busy in service. And so that's what I did. I showed up here every Thursday, whether I wanted to or not. And I stood up here and I read the announcements, and people got to know me, and I got to know people. And man, we were tight. Like, we did everything together, you know? And I'm sure that people here still do everything together. This is a really awesome place to get sober. There's tons of stuff to do. That ever, like, question of, like, what am I going to do when I get sober? There's nothing to do. There's, like, so much to do, you know? I'm, like, so tired right now because God has, like, given me this, like, huge agenda at this point in my life. So, long story short, man, you know, like, I got involved here. Thank you. I got involved here. I've always held a service position at my home group. If I'm not, like, currently holding a position, I'm trying to be here early to set up. I'm trying to stay late to break down. I show up here, you know. If nowhere else, I show up here. I still try to go to at least 4 or 5 meetings a week. Like I said, I've been given a lot, through God and through the program that has made my life extremely full. And that all came as a result of just, like, trying to do the next right thing and, like, trying to stick my hand out to the next person. And I'll tell you what, if you're uncomfortable here, stick your hand out and act like you know what the hell you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, it will save your butt every time, you know? I can't tell you how much I hate being up here, you know, but I'll feel great after I sit back down, you know, and God is something that I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous with. I found God through the secretary position, through the treasurer position, through picking up the chairs, through doing stuff that maybe not everybody sees, you know. That's where I found the God of my understanding, was through service for others, you know. Like Chrissy said, I've tried to stress to the people I sponsor that, like, the uncomfortable stuff is what's going to keep you here, you know. Like, do the stuff that you don't want to do at all, and you're more than likely going to stay, you know, because it gets easier, you know. And the payoff is huge. It is a small price to pay for the life I have, you know. Just to, like, in the past year, I got to marry somebody that does the deal here, you know, and that's why I got to marry him, is because we do the deal. We keep this first, you know, at all costs. And, you know, as a result of AA, I got to, like, engage in a lifelong relationship with somebody. Man, I was not having any lifelong relationships 5 years ago, you know. I wasn't even sure I was going to get to keep my relationship with my parents 5 years ago, you know? And like I said, that is, I see my parents more now than I ever did when I was living 10 minutes from them, you know, and they're 6 hours away. I hate leaving my parents, you know? I hate when I go to see them and having to leave them again, you know? Which is something I never thought would happen for me. I went back to school. As much as I, like, fought that idea when I first got sober, I was like, I don't need school. I don't want to go to school. There's no nothing for me at school. I'm a salesperson, you know. I went back to school, and I got into a program that's going to, like, change my whole world, you know. And so what I'm trying to say is that, you know, I got a lot of stuff here from Alcoholics Anonymous and from God. And from you guys, you know, like, I just did what the people before me did. And it's real simple. I mean, it sucks sometimes, but it's real simple if you just do what somebody else that stayed here a little bit longer than you has done, you know. So, am I good? We're good. Thank you.